from New York, it's the Gary Nall Show. And now, your host, Gary Nall.
Got my mojo working, but just gonna work on you.
I'm Gary Nall. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to begin with our latest on health and healing. Then we're going to segue into a special commentary on Danny Schachter. I knew Danny for a long time, and I'll share my thoughts on him and how sorry we are for his passing. I'll then talk about this administration sets a record for withholding government files. Also, the landscape of U.S. failure, financial collapse, leads to war. Partners in Stupidity in the War on Terror, John Acheson from Common Dreams. U.S. Jails are Warehouses for the Sick and Poor and Low-Risk People by Julia Stach from The Guardian. I'll be giving you new information today that you haven't been made aware of on the real good independent science on the dangers of vaccines, including the MMR vaccine. And continuing with our discussion on fascism, a special report from Glenn Greenwald from The Intercept on the Orwellian rebranding of mass surveillance as merely bulk collection. Also, do corporations really need more rights? Fast tracking of the TTP, or Trans-Pacific Partnership, is a bad idea. David Corton. We have a lot to share, so let's begin. From the University of California, Berkeley, scientists have identified a new molecular pathway critical to aging and confirmed that the process can be manipulated to help make old blood like new again. The researchers found that blood stem cells' ability to repair damage caused by inappropriate protein folding in the mitochondria, cells' energy station, is critical to their survival and regenerative capacity. And the discovery is to be published in the current Journal of Science. Now, what this means in lay language is, ultimately, a cell dies when it cannot deal with stress. And this is in the Department of Nutrition, Science, and Toxicology. Quote, we found that by slowing down the activity of mitochondria in the blood stem cells, we were able to enhance their capacity to handle stress and rejuvenate old blood. This confirms the significance of this pathway in the aging process, end quote. That was from the professor in that department. So what does this mean in just lay language? It means that the more stress we're under, the more our DNA is adversely affected. Now, I mentioned that on yesterday's program, or the day before, about a whole lot of research in India on two villages, both at a natural preserve. One had to move, and the stress at the DNA level was measurable and substantial and caused them disease and shortened their lifespan. Think of all the things that we get stressed about, but we don't have a positive, natural way of alleviating the stress. Then that means we adapt to it. So we adapt with anger and rage. A lot of people walk around just ready for an argument. They look for anything to show their intemperance. And then they feel completely justified, this kind of self-righteous indignation. Well, they pay a price for that. It kills them. On the one hand, any stress is going to be affecting your DNA. So what this is saying is, we now know the pathway. We can actually measure this. So it means that we have to slow everything down. And if we slow it down and de-stress it, we can actually turn on the healing process and rejuvenate, make old blood new again. Why do you think it's so important that we give ourselves time for meditation, for quiet time, to go to a park and sit? Now, we have people all over the world listening right now, and in almost all those areas, there are commons. There are places that the average person can go and just relax and enjoy themselves. They're beautiful vistas. Even in the middle of the winter, you could go into a botanical garden, like the Bronx Botanical Garden or the Brooklyn Botanical Garden. Beautiful places. But we need that time. All of us do. There are no exceptions. We need time to be alone. We need time to slow down our thoughts, our actions, because what our body is doing, it is in that slowdown time that we begin to rejuvenate. And we begin to lessen the likely outcome that is negative upon the DNA. One more reason to give yourself a time to be near nature. Even if it's something simple, like in Central Park, there's so many wonderful places that you can go and sit and just enjoy yourself and be with nature, and yet you're still in a city, just a few minutes walk out of it. I love to go to the Museum of Natural History, love to go to the Metropolitan Museum of Art, and just sit there in front of a Thomas Cole painting, an 18th century Hudson Valley painter, or Turner painting. He's one of my favorites. And just appreciate what I'm seeing, feel the energy of it. It de-stresses you. We need more of that. So make time in your life for that. Now, a separate study at the University of British Columbia, they found that stem cells show promise for reversing type 2 diabetes. And this was very important. Stem cells, by the way, generic cells that haven't yet taken on specialized form and function, have recently been used by scientists at the University of British Columbia and elsewhere to reverse type 1 diabetes. These were in mice, and type 1 diabetes, which usually begins in childhood, I believe, because of vaccines. But what happens is the pancreas produces little or no insulin, the hormone that enables cells to metabolize sugar. And these new results, published in the peer-reviewed journal Stem Cell Reports, holds a really good, great potential for type 2 diabetes. Now, since we have an epidemic of diabetes, type 1 and type 2, and since we have an epidemic of type 2 diabetes in children, that's purely lifestyle, then this could help save suffering and millions of lives. So that's good. I'll give you more on this when there is more to say, when it gets closer to being introduced. Also, a study finds that being near greener, even vacant lots, lowers heart rates. This is in the University of Pennsylvania. Quote, greening vacant lots may be associated with biologic reductions in stress. This is from the Perelman School of Medicine, University of Pennsylvania. Residents who walked near newly green vacant lots had significantly lower heart rates compared to walking near a blighted or neglected vacant lot. Quote, our goal was to scientifically explore the connection between city environments and stress. We used heart rate as a physiological marker of acute stress, and the reduction we found suggests a biological link between urban blight reduction strategies like vacant lot greening and reductions in stress. This was published in the American Journal of Public Health. Here's my thoughts. I've been to a lot of the blighted cities, the ghettoized cities. Now, the ghettoized cities are morphing into something unique and interesting. The blight part is being squeezed into a narrow area so that the once ghettoized area can be bought up by developers and transformed generally around rivers, as they did in Detroit. They took a whole bunch of old factory buildings and made them into modern co-ops with whole little mini cities where you go into an area that's got maybe 15 of these old warehouse buildings that are now co-ops, tall ceilings, big open spaces, some are 5,000 square feet, bigger than most houses, real sense of roominess. You look out, you look at Canada on the other side and a major booming city across the Canadian border. And then you can look downtown, see the skyline of Detroit, And you go downstairs, there are restaurants. I frequently, the PBS would put me up there when I go up to do the fundraising for them. And I would walk around the streets, and they have security, and it's nice environment. Again, it's not my style aesthetically because it's just warehouses, but they're now modern and not a whole lot of green, but they have all kinds of restaurants and taverns and places for people to socialize. Well, what they're doing now, they did it in Baltimore, but you have to go through a ghetto to get to that. They did it in West Palm Beach. You go through a ghetto in West Palm Beach to get to West Palm Beach. You have about 2 miles of pure ghetto. So they're doing that around the United States. The problem is they're not concerned with what they're doing with the people that they're expelling. My thought is, don't go in and gentrify something and so you can have a place for upper mobile people and younger people to have a nicer place to live, because, again, that's part of that green zone that I've been talking about. 1,000 selective, protected, wealthy green zones. Instead, why don't you do this? Take an area in Detroit. Let's say you take 3 square blocks, 4 square blocks that are just blighted, that nobody wants to live there, nobody wants to walk by it. It would cause your pulse rate to go up. It's just depressing. I've been there. I've seen it many times. If the people of Detroit are willing to work with the government, and if they could give me the right to develop that as just a green place out of my pocket, my time and my dime, I'm going to go in there and work with a coalition of local community people to show how you could green an area to make it magnificent. Meaning you would take everything out, clean up the soil, build a playground, build ponds, build hydroponic houses to feed people in the community, green spaces, beautiful gardens, and something that would be for everyone, free. Everyone can go and enjoy it. So suddenly, even though you still have a ghetto, you have an oasis in the ghetto. And once you have an oasis in the ghetto, you can begin to then say, okay, see what we did? You know, it's beautiful. It's run by the community. It's for the community. Now, why don't we take that block across the street and go in there and get volunteers and people with different skills, and let's rehabilitate every house. And let's put solar panels on. Let's get some foundation money. Let's make this a modern, green, all-American community. And you start with one block. I tried to do it in Camden, New Jersey, but the mayor, no one would give me anything. And what I don't want to deal with and what I won't deal with is the corruption and politics of bureaucrats. I refuse to do anything because nothing will ever get done, or done right, or done in an honest and ethical way. So that's something for the people listening in your community. In fact, I'm willing to do it anywhere in America. So if you have a blighted, ghettoized area, and you would like to see how we can begin the process of de-ghettoizing one block at a time, no massive project, just do one thing at a time, and then let it spread and be an inspiration. If it can be done any place, it can be done every place. And see if that won't work. All right, and you can reach me at my office at 646-926-5422. Happy to work on it. And again, it costs no one anything. Doesn't cost, I'm not asking a dime from anyone. I don't want anyone's money. I don't want the city's money. I don't want anything. I'll do it myself. But I'll do it with cooperation from local community people. Because it's time that we stopped blaming the people for what we have done. We've neglected them. We have not provided the jobs in those communities. We have not supported the maintenance of those communities. So when they become broken down and no longer functional, and when opportunistic parasites, the criminal element, moves in, we then forget how many good, honest, ethical, decent people are there who deserve to be helped. And I've said this 1,000 times. Let us not make this about race. Let us not make it about class. This is something that will happen anywhere. If you took Park Avenue and you refused to pick up the garbage, if you didn't repair all the water main breaks, if you didn't put a fuel in the buildings, if you didn't repair the broken locks, if you didn't replace the broken windows, if you didn't pick up the garbage from people's buildings, and if you didn't stop criminal elements from going in those buildings, every single building on Park Avenue would become a ghettoized building. That's how easy it is when we don't maintain anything the way it should be. Nice to have you with us, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. Aggressively pursuing higher social status may exact a toll on health. University of Utah, quote, bad news for relentless power seekers, the likes of Frank Underwood on House of Cards. Climbing the ladder of social status through aggressive, competitive striving might shorten your life as a result of increased vulnerability to vascular disease. That's according to a new research by psychologist Timothy Smith and colleagues at the University of Utah. And the good news for successful types who are friendlier, attaining higher social status as a result of prestige and freely giving respect may be protective. So let me get this straight. And this was presented at the annual meeting of the American Psychosomatic Society. If you're the typical politician, there are a few exceptions, but if you're the typical politician or the typical corporate aggressive power seeker, if you're the typical media megalomaniac, if you're the typical highly aggressive and competitive a person in any environment, there's a likelihood that you're going to be more susceptible to a heart attack or die of heart disease. But if you attain your power or respect or prestige by being thoughtful, positive, respectful of others, and not abusive, it's actually protective. Good. Well, we got a lot of nice people in this society that are also powerful. I once said, if we want to change America, we should have the most compassionate and visionary progressive minds each take 1,000 names of retired CEOs of Fortune 500 companies and reach out to them about a project and give them maybe 5 to choose from. Would they come in and help on a project that is meant to help society? It's not about getting rich, it's about making it a better world. I'm willing to bet that you would have a phenomenal response. I've met many of these individuals, these men and women who were the captains of industry. And here's the irony. When they were responsible for increasing the profit of the company or maintaining the stock value, they would make decisions without a sense of how that decision impacted the people, the environment. But once they're retired, they're cut off. They still have their Rolodex. They still play golf in West Palm Beach or in Naples, Florida, or in Palm Springs. But they no longer are relevant. Do you not think these people then start to feel about being in effect? Here's your gold certificate. Goodbye. The phone never rings. No one cares about them. And this is a person that worked hard to get to where they were and then served their company based upon the rules that they lived by then. And now they have nothing to look forward to. They still have their brain. They still have these big, fat Rolodexes with lots of contacts. They still have imagination and they have resources. That is one avenue that has not been tapped, and it should be, because a lot of these people don't have to adhere to the political, religious, ideological, financial dogmas of the past. In effect, they're capable of evolving into a much more complete humanistic being. They're a resource untapped. And finally, vitamin D helps immune cells prevent atherosclerosis and diabetes. That's great news. This is from Washington University School of Medicine. Quote, In recent years, a deficiency of vitamin D has been linked to type 2 diabetes and heart disease, two illnesses that commonly occur together and are the most common cause of illness and death in Western countries. Both disorders are rooted in chronic inflammation, which leads to insulin resistance and the buildup of artery clogging plaque. So this was published in Cells, and it talked about vitamin D helping prevent both of these. Great news. And this is from a main scientific organization. That's why I shared the sources of all this. So take your vitamin D. And also, by the way, for those of you who can't get a good night's sleep, take your melatonin. You don't have to have much, 1 milligram, 2 milligrams, because from Capital Medical University in Beijing, using melatonin can provide you with more and better quality sleep than using earplugs or eye mask or anything else. That's according to the latest research they did. Now, this audience knows that melatonin is the hormone secreted by the body to regulate sleep, usually in periods of darkness. And our body produces melatonin. It boosts our capacity for deep sleep and helping our immune system. So your melatonin at night if you can't sleep. Also, vitamin D, if it's too low, can contribute to depression in young women. This is according to Oregon State University in a major study that they just published in Psychiatry Research. Make sure you're getting your vitamin D. One more reason, it can help you, if you're a woman, young woman, from being depressed. So that's the latest on health and healing. And I like to give you the latest, newest every day, so we're all up to date. We're going to take a brief break and come back in a special tribute to a friend, Danny Schechter. Please stay with us.
Marcus, darling.
To welcome you from all over the world and all the stations that carry this program around the United States. First of all, thank you for sharing. Yesterday, we had the passing of Danny Schechter. Many people know Danny from his wonderful documentaries and books. I've known Danny for a long time. In fact, years ago, Danny said after a premiere, I went down to the Quad to see his documentary on a very good documentary on In Debt We Trust. It was 2006. And what surprised me is that here was an outstanding documentary, the best of its kind on credit cards and the companies and the banks. And it was a tiny little audience, like 20 people. And it was only there that. And afterwards, Danny said, why don't we do a film together? And we had talked many, many times and met. Danny did not bear fools well. Danny was an extremely intense person. He liked to get right on an issue, dedicated, a workhorse. He was a phenomenal writer. He was a true intellect. Danny was one of those people that whatever the topic was that he was discussing, he was going to take you to a place more often than not that you hadn't been. He had a distinguished educational background with degrees from Cornell University, London School of Economics, and he was a fellow at Harvard University. And for a period of time, he also was a professor at Columbia University School of Journalism. He wrote many books. He won many awards. He won Emmys for his ABC News magazine 2020. He also later became the executive editor of the Media Channel, which he started. He liked to call himself the news dissector. He was a producer, journalist, filmmaker, media critic, and he had a voracious appetite for in-depth reporting on controversial issues. Among Danny's books were The More You Watch, The Less You Know, Falun Gong's Challenge to China, Embedded, Weapons of Mass Deception, outstanding book, by the way. The Death of Media, in the fight to save democracy, when news lies, plunder, investigating our economic calamity and the subprime scandal, the crime of our time, why Wall Street is not too big to jail, blogathon, reflections and revelations on the news dissector, and these are some of the stories that he wrote. He also did documentaries. American Surveillance State was his latest. Who Rules America? Plunder. In Debt We Trust. Weapons of Mass Deception. A Hero for All. Nelson Mandela's Farewell. Beyond Life. Timothy Leary Lives. Sowing Seeds, Reaping Peace. The World of Seeds of Peace. Prisoner of Hope. Countdown to Freedom, Give Peace a Chance, Mandela in America. He also was a recipient of the Society of Professional Journalists Award for Excellence in Documentary Journalism. Plus, of course, he won two Emmys on ABC News at 2020. But we found a place for Danny on the Progressive Radio Network every Thursday. He had been there for nearly 8 years. And when he would come in, Danny would go upstairs in the office next to mine, sit and do his homework. I would go downstairs and look in the studio and watch him, because Danny didn't give any soft questions. He didn't have soft interviews. They were in depth. He did his homework. He had too much respect for the audience and for the nature of journalism to do sloppy work. He was meticulous. And we had many, many, hundreds of conversations. Danny wanted to do a documentary. In fact, we were going to do a documentary together next year. I just had two full plate right now, doing three, finishing three. And one of the things that 3 years ago Danny and I decided to do, when I told him I was going to do a veterans village, to have a place where homeless vets suffering from Gulf War syndrome, post-traumatic stress, could go, and for free, they wouldn't pay a penny, they and their families could be getting holistic, humanistic, medical and psychological help to get them rehabilitated to go back into society and also help them find some work. It would be a transition place. And we came up with the idea of doing a documentary village. And I told him, we're going to do this. And a documentary village would be where you would have a group of people who would submit ideas for socially relevant documentaries. They had to be on progressive social themes. Then those that would be accepted, there would be a maximum of three per year, would have a chance to live in this village and have free room and board and be able to have their films produced at no cost to them. And they would be able to write and direct their films. And then there would be an effort to help them get them distributed, and with the proceeds going to that person. That was on the agenda. In Danny's honor, I intend to implement that next year. Within 12 months, I will have a documentary village of progressive minds in place. He was a wonderful person. Ironically, just this past week, Professor Jim Feast and I had a conversation, because Jim's one of our leading editors, and he's working on a major women's book on women's health issues. And he said, I'm rushing to get this book on Danny updated. Rushing. Well, wasn't to be. But this book will come out from Seven Stories Press, and it'll be a good one. Danny is like Greg Palast. Very similar, by the way. Greg, brilliant. Man has got a deep mind, background in economics, Chicago School, great investigative journalist, BBC, does an amazing amount of reporting. But there's a whole group of reporters who are in their 70s, Danny was 72, in their mid-60s to 70s, who were very committed to the movements in the 60s and 70s, but then things changed socially. People in corporations, news media, heading movements, they changed and forgot about all those thousands upon thousands of people who were the foot soldiers and the people who committed themselves, and they became irrelevant. Unless these people hustled to get a dollar to do their work, to make a film, they struggled long periods of time, months, even years, where they were trying to scrape enough money together to produce a film. And Greg is still producing an outstanding work. Danny produced, but on a really, you know, really minimal budget. I mean, he was down to bare bones financially because other people were getting the money. Other people were getting the jobs. So it's even more to his credit that he was able to do so much and keep relevant with his books, his films, and his radio program when he didn't have any major support. Financial support that was there at one time. So let us not forget all of the Danny Schechters. Let us not forget all the people who've been around a long time. Never once did they veer from the course of caring about society, caring about a life of other people, and committed to helping them. And it's sometimes only after they die that people appreciate how much they did. Wasn't it Adlai Stevenson who said the human race has improved everything except the human race? Danny's goal was to help the human race help itself. Now let's take a brief look at just one clip of what represented Danny Schechter in his life, his work.
Free. Yes, he is free in many ways that he wasn't before. And Danny Schechter, your news dissector here with Polar Levine, Polarity One on Progressive Radio Network, PRN.FM. This is News Dissector Radio honoring Nelson Mandela as we speak here in New York. Thousands and thousands of South Africans have lined up in Pretoria to go pass by his coffin and pay their final respects to him. 2 days ago, over 150 leaders from around the world came to South Africa for a memorial, which went on and on and on, including President Obama, but many other presidents as well, paying tribute to Mandela. Now it's the South African people who finally get their chance, and they've really astounded the government because they didn't expect quite the scale and size of the reaction of people who are, in a sense, paying tribute to him with their bodies, with their, you know, patience, standing in line the way many South Africans did in 1994 as they waited for their first opportunity to vote. And so as the world says goodbye to Mandela today on this program, we're going to try to talk a little bit, not just about him, but about the movement in this country that helped put pressure on our government and on the world to change U.S. support for South Africa, to try to bring about a different approach in our foreign policy. And joining me, no one person that I can think of is a better choice of someone to join me on this is my friend, my comrade, my colleague, Prexy Nesbitt from Chicago, who's been a stalwart, as they say, in the anti-apartheid struggle, but the struggle of people supporting the peoples of Southern Africa in their fight for justice and against colonialism. Prexy teaches a course at Columbia College in Chicago about Nelson Mandela. And so he's standing by. But before we get going in our conversation with Prexy, I want you to remember this song, which did so much to spark activism in that period in the late 80s as the world waited for Mandela.
Only one man in a dummy. Are you so blind that you cannot see? Are you so deaf that you cannot hear? It's me, Nelson Mandela.
Betsy Nesbitt, as you listen to that song, Free Nelson Mandela, and you think about your long walk to freedom alongside Mandela in the fight against apartheid, what comes to mind?
Danny, it's great to be on this show with you. What comes to mind first for me is probably an illegal trip that I made to South Africa, to the Transkei in 1983, just after I'd been working with the World Council Churches program to combat racism. And in that trip, we were doing seminars and training of people, and it was very difficult circumstance. We had to talk often late at night on the roads in the dark, walking along. People kept saying to me, if only you could talk to the old man, if only you could talk to the old man. And I kept thinking this was Mandela, and I couldn't understand. How could they possibly be saying this? But in fact, what I learned later was that they wanted me to talk to a wonderful man by the name of Beyers Naudé, who was one of the leading clerics in South Africa, very outspoken. I know you know him. And he was one of the great leaders of that struggle, a name that many people haven't heard about.
He was with the Dutch Reformed Church, white Afrikaner. An indication of what many of us don't recognize is that this was a struggle that was non-racial at its core, was unifying people from churches, from labor, from community groups across the spectrum, an alliance of politics between organizations and activists of all kinds. And I think we tend to view it all today as if Nelson Mandela personally was in charge of everything. He wasn't, was he?
And he would be the first to say that. I remember him being on one time the Oprah Winfrey Show, and I happened to be there, and Oprah kept saying to him, "Oh, I love you, you are so great, you are my hero, da da da," and Madiba just kept saying to her, "I am a member of the African National Congress. Along with many comrades, I have been engaged in the struggle to free South Africa."
Well, you know, our media has a tendency to make celebrities out of certain individuals and to give them an inordinate amount of attention. We're seeing this with Mandela. On the one hand, he deserves to be celebrated for his long service to the struggle there. On the other hand, as you point out, he never claimed that he was waving a magic wand to bring about change in South Africa. And in a way, that's a media narrative of the great men of history, you know, that history is made by people at the top, a couple of really important people do everything. And in fact, this was the people of South Africa who brought this change about through their own sacrifice. Many of them died. Many of them were tortured. Many of them were in prison. Mandela wasn't the only one who suffered a family breakup, who suffered the kind of treatment that he did. And he nevertheless was able to become a symbol and a stand-up substitute for so many others. And he was not conscious of that. You know, I met him on several occasions, spoke to him about this. He was very insistent. He was embarrassed, really, by the kind of attention that he was given, as if he was Jesus reborn kind of thing.
Yeah, you know that great ending to that film you did, Danny, Mandela in America. I'll never forget that ending. It's when he's standing in his film saying, "It's not the kings and the presidents who make history, but the ordinary masses of the ordinary people." It's a great expression.
And the support that he received from so many people around the world is a sign that people want, you know, people they can believe in as leaders. They want people of integrity. They want people who are willing to fight for them and with them, and not just be deified, you know, as you know, kind of the leaders. I think one of the reasons Obama and Clinton before him were so, you know, taken with Mandela is because they could never become a Mandela. And what is it about him, do you think, that inspires this, you know, total devotion, in a sense, that we're seeing? It's not, you know, like it is for most politicians. We're going to come back in a few minutes, but we thought we'd take a pause and share South Africa's national anthem with our listeners.
Wonderful.
Africa,
That was just one sample of one program that Danny Schechter, the News Dissector, did over the Progressive Radio Network for the last 78 years. In honor of Danny, I'm going to keep his program on the air for the next 2 years. He did hundreds of programs. Casey and Sharon, our archivists, are going through them now, selecting the most relevant and making them what we call evergreen shows, so that you would never know that they were not being done immediately. But his program, which is on Thursdays, will continue. So we've done it with others. We did Mike Rupert. So we're going to do it with Danny Schechter. So he still has a home, even if he's passed. That's how much respect I have for the man. Now, upcoming guests, before we go to some of our commentaries. Next week, we're going to have Philip Wolin on. Wow. You haven't heard Philip Wolin? What a person. One of the most articulate, intelligent, dynamic speakers I've ever heard in my life on the subject of animal rights. So we'll talk with him. Jim O'Day, former co-founder of the Institute of Noetic Sciences with astronaut Edgar Mitchell and director of Amnesty International. We're going to have them speaking on the constructive versus destructive activism from a spiritual perspective on the Progressive Commentary Hour. On Wednesday, Dr. Melvin Kenner, anthropologist, neuroscientist at Emory University, speaking on the need for women to become more engaged in leadership from an evolutionary perspective to lessen catastrophic male dominance. Dr. Andrew Harvey, probably one of the deepest thinkers on the planet today. He will be a part of our conversations with remarkable minds. Here's a spiritual philosopher, graduate from Cambridge and Oxford, and a great writer. And we're going to speak about something related to climate change and environmental catastrophe, how to cope with the threat of extinction. Dr. Dawson Church, a seminal thinker and researcher on the science of neuropsychology and the energy medicine, epigenetics and women's health. Professor Guy McPherson, professor emeritus, Arizona State University. We're going to talk about climate change and the failures of the IPCC and why their statistics and forecasts are too conservative, meaning what they predict is bad. It's a whole lot worse. Professor Naomi Orzix, professor of history at Harvard University, speaking on life in the future, in the near future, climate change and economic disruption, what it's going to look like. It will not be a utopia. It will be a dystopian society. Andrew Cockburn, Washington editor of Harper, specializing in national security, speaking on the rise of high-tech assassins, the current use of drones now, and what is planned for drone technology in the future. Paul Hiler, former popular Canadian politician and political acting prime minister in the 1960s, speaking on the money mafia and the corporate takeover of democracy to create global fascist bloc. Dr. Hyla Kass on women's health. Those are some of the people you can expect next week. Try to get the best minds sharing things that empower us. Now, for the remainder of our program today, some short commentaries on issues that I think are very important. First up is the trade deals, because it's just a matter of time before the Republican and Democrats come together and say, yes, fast-track the Trans-Pacific Partnership. If that passes, it will destroy what remains of union, representation, negotiated bargaining practices in the United States. It will virtually destroy all, I mean all, of our laws at the state level, clean air, clean water, our national forests. It will destroy everything. And the fact is that it's been done in super secrecy, where 500 to 600 delegates of corporations have been completely aware and writing the legislation, but no member of our own Congress has been allowed to see it or participate in it. But the White House, they've been fully aware of what's going on. So that tells you something about who's got your back. From Deidre Fulton, quote, provisions of international trade deals currently under negotiation threatens domestic sovereignty while giving corporations special legal rights. Charges a letter signed by more than 100 law professors and sent yesterday to congressional leaders and U.S. Trade Representative Michael Froman. The letter, organized and released by the Washington, D.C. headquarters Alliance for Justice, specifically opposes the inclusion of investor-state dispute settlement language in the corporate-friendly Trans-Pacific Partnership and the equally troubling Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership, the TTIP. Quote, these treaties grant foreign corporations a special legal privilege, the right to initiate dispute settlement proceedings against a government for actions that allegedly cause a loss of profit for the corporation. Essentially, corporations use these trade organizations to challenge government policies, actions, and decisions they allege reduce the value of their investments. These challenges are not heard in a normal court, but instead by a tribunal of private lawyers whose identity is always kept secret, end quote. In particular, the letter points out that in recent years, corporations have challenged numerous regulations aimed at protecting the public interest, including decisions on plain packaging rules for cigarettes, toxic bans, natural resource policies, health and safety, and denials of permits for toxic waste dumps. With the environment, public health, and workers' rights on the line, it is essential that trade pacts prioritize people over corporations. Quote, it is fundamental to our democracy that our justice system treats all equally, regardless of wealth or power. When laws and regulations protecting everyone every day in America are at issue, any challenge should take place in our courts, not before a private tribunal, end quote. And by the way, just so you understand this, let's just say that, I'll give you an example, and this is not an exaggerated example. Let's say that a corporation in Europe has a product they've invented to spray on trees to kill a mold, and it works. But it also is extremely toxic, 1,000 times more toxic than DDT. It stays for 100 years in the ground, so it does not disperse. It also is toxic to the immune systems of everything it comes into contact with, birds, dogs, cats, bees, and humans. So normally, when something like this was introduced, the EPA would do tests and say, this is not allowed, and it would not be allowed. Now, that corporation would sue. Let's say it was in California, they would sue the state of California. And they would say that over the next 5 years, we would have netted $500 million in profit. The state of California would say, but it's toxic. It kills people, kills animals. Too bad. It will be taken into a tribunal. The judges in the tribunal will be lawyers working for, you guessed it, the corporations. Their decision is final. There is no appeal. The identities of the judges and lawyers involved is secret. So we have no idea of how to hold them accountable on any level. Then the judges come back and say, California must pay $500 million to this company. And you're thinking, this is crazy. I mean, surely you wouldn't punish a state and its citizens for wanting to protect its citizen, animals, and water? That's correct. But right now, China, which produces some of the most toxic, corrupted products in the world, and India, the same, they could flood America with products that we could not ban or face enormous fines. These, and how many different corporations would initially be involved? We guesstimate over 75,000 corporations. So you could imagine the litigation. You could be dealing in hundreds of billions of dollars annually in fines. And also, if they wanted to come in and exploit one of our natural resources, we couldn't stop them. We would no longer have a U.S. Supreme Court to protect us. We would no longer have state or environmental laws. That's how bad this is. Let no one tell you otherwise. And yet the Republicans and Democrats who signed on to this, the President of the United States signed on to this, they all know that what's in it for them is unlimited private contracts when they're out of office, those million-dollar lecture fees to come in and say nothing for 45 minutes, as the Clintons are famous for doing. That's the payback. Just remember, if you and I want to get a lecture, we're in a highly competitive market. We have to be able to say something that is unique and original that would inspire and excite people. When these people go down to Wall Street and they get $500,000 for 45 minutes, they're saying nothing that everyone doesn't already know. It's their way of saying, thanks for taking away the Glass-Steagall Act, Clinton, and come three or four times a year. We're good for $5 million a year. Oh, and go ahead and be on these 25 different boards at $400,000 each a year for each board. Oh, and let's make sure that those countries, you know, the really evil countries like Saudi Arabia with axis of evil, the axis of evil, Saudi Arabia is right at the top, number one. Beheadings, stoning women to death, no rights for women, and the number one pair of extremist groups, including ISIS and Al-Qaeda, you know, our ally, they're good for $100 million to your foundation. My God, it is so palpable. So that's what happens when you end up on the wrong end of a partnership. The American people are on the wrong end of the Trans-Pacific Partnership. And the President of the United States is his biggest cheerleader. The money that Clinton's made, Obama will dwarf that. He'll be the richest president in American history, having more money than all the other presidents combined within 4 years of leaving office. That's the payback. That's how it works. Anyone who doesn't understand that is just being naive. And one more person, David Corton, on this from Yes Magazine. Quote, President Obama is currently pressing members of Congress to pass fast-track authority for a trade and investment agreement called the Trans-Pacific Partnership. If fast-track passes, it means that Congress must approve or deny the TPP with minimal debate and no amendments. Astonishingly, our lawmakers have not even seen the agreement they're being asked to expedite. The rulings of these tribunals preempt national laws and the decisions of national courts. The TPP is presented as an agreement to increase U.S. exports and jobs, but what really is at stake is democracy in the United States as well as the 11 other Pacific countries that are parties to this treaty. Given past agreements on which the TPP is modeled, including NAFTA, the North American Trade Agreement, TPP provisions will likely have significant implications for nearly every aspect of American life, including intellectual property rights, labor, environmental protection, consumer safety and product labeling, government procurement, and national resource management. Given the way these agreements are crafted, we can be quite certain that the implications will favor corporate profits over human well-being. And once the agreement is approved, its provisions will trump national and local laws, including the U.S. Constitution, and will not be subject to review or revision by any national legislative or judicial body, including the U.S. Supreme Court. It is expected that the TPP will include an investor-state dispute settlement provision that gives foreign corporations the right to sue governments for lost profits due to laws, such as environmental standards and safeguards for workers. Now, it goes on. We're out of time. I would suggest this. For what remains of the labor movement in the United States, if Congress gives the president the right for fast-tracking this, your days are numbered. Why don't you then get together and have a general strike? Close down America. Close down the airports, the train station, the buses. Close down government offices. Close it down. And show that this small group of elite individuals do not have the right to destroy our democracy, our Constitution, our Bill of Rights, and our quality of life. Not to do that, in my opinion, is to make you culpable in supporting this. Stand up, stand out, and show that you really are with the American public. The only way you can do that, a general strike. I'm Gary Knoll. Thank you all for listening. Look forward to sharing more on our next program. Have a nice day. Sometimes in our lives.
all have pain, we all have sorrow, but if we are wise, we know that there's always tomorrow. Lean on me when you're not strong, and I'll be your friend. I'll help you carry on, for it won't be long till I'm gone.